Welcome back to the LSCC podcast. If you have any questions about what we do here at LSCC, how we do it, or why, let us know by emailing office@lscc.tv. And now let's continue our series in Exodus, Change or Die.
Well, welcome. Thank you for joining us again on this fine day. I hope you've had an opportunity to get outside and enjoy the warm weather that we have been having over the past week. It's been gorgeous and one of the reasons I love living in the UP. Now, if you're just joining us, we're in the midst of our Change or Die sermon series. And we talked last week a little bit about what that's not. It's not this scare tactic to get people to convert to Jesus or else they're going to burn. That's not the case. What this is it's more of a message for the church. And we need to change. We need to be able to reach our community, our culture, our society. We need to be able to reach into the lives of those around us. We've been taking this look with that in mind. We've been taking this look at the book of Exodus. And last week, we looked at chapter 1 of Exodus, and we learned a few different things. We learned about how seasons change, how life looks different. We were looking at the Israelites and how they were living in Egypt, and they had been there for a time with Joseph. They had been there for several hundred years living in prosperity and in this safe haven where life was good. It was great, in fact. Things were going well, and they were growing in number. The Hebrew nation was getting larger and larger. And well, then change. Change happened. A new king came into power, and he didn't remember Joseph or Joseph's descendants. And this once safe haven became a nightmare for the Hebrew people. We can see that happen quite often in our world. What once was good and great can end up being not so great. And what we like to do is maintain the memory of the greatness and live in that memory. And when we do that, we don't change to adapt to the now. So that's what this sermon series is about. It's about looking forward. Last week, we read about the order that this new king in Egypt had put in place to kill the newborn baby boys. He sent this order to the midwives, the Hebrew midwives who would help deliver the children, and they refused. They refused to follow through because they feared God, and God honored that and honored them. We were challenged to reach our community. We were challenged to be like the midwives and stand up to injustice like they did. And we were also challenged to no longer be a church of complacency, but a church of action, a church alive and reaching into our community to change the lives of those who don't know Jesus. This week we are taking a look at Exodus chapter 2 through chapter 3, verse 10. And there's a lot to go over here, so we're going to get right into that. But we will begin to see how God has put this plan in place to restore and to save the Hebrew people from the Egyptians. Let's take a look now at Exodus, starting in chapter 2, verse 1 through 4. About this time, a man and a woman from the tribe of Levi got married. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She saw that he was a special baby and kept him hidden for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she got a basket made of papyrus reeds and waterproofed it with tar and pitch. She put the baby in the basket and laid it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile River. The baby's sister then stood at a distance, watching to see what would happen to him. Now, if we take a look at what's going on here, I think we see something quite amazing. The amount of faith this woman has, the amount of trust in God, is astonishing. Think of this. And for those of you who are mothers, realize what's happening here. This woman who has had this baby boy during a time where there was an order to kill all newborn boys. She hides him for 3 months. Now, that may not seem like a big deal, but hiding a baby for 3 months in the setting that she was in, that is probably very challenging. And then when she can no longer hide him, she places him in a basket in a river and sends him down the river. That is a huge amount of faith. Trusting that placing the baby in this river and into God's hands, that God will take care of that baby. And that speaks to the situation she's living in as well. To think that putting my child in the river is safer than keeping my child with me. There's a lot of difficulty going on for this woman, a lot of struggle and a lot of worry. But you know, it makes me think of the church, and it makes me think of those things that we hold precious to ourselves. Maybe your parents or your family was involved with the foundation of the church, and so it's precious to you, like a child. Are you willing to place that child or that precious element into the hands of God? Or do you want to maintain control and keep it close to you and sacred? And I'm not saying that this is a terrible thing or desire, because we do want to keep things close to us that are precious. We want to keep them safe, but God's telling us that we're needing to entrust Him, that we need to have faith in Him, like this woman, placing her son in a basket, trusting that God will take care of it, realizing that God is in control. We need to treat the church that way as well, because it's His. This is His building. This is His place, His house. Are you trusting God with those things that you find precious and sacred? Or are you in control? We continue looking at Exodus chapter 2, verse 5 through 9. We see the story continue to develop. Soon Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and her attendants walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it for her. When the princess opened it, she saw the baby. The little boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This must be one of the Hebrew children," she said. Then the baby's sister approached the princess. "Should I go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" she asked. "Yes, do," the princess replied. So the girl went and called the baby's mother. "Take this baby and nurse him for me," the princess told the baby's mother. "I will pay you for your help." So the woman took her baby home and nursed him. Look at this. Look at God's plan unfolding. And I love the irony of what's happening. God has placed this desire in this woman's heart to have this baby and to hide him. And then out of the trust that she has for God, she places the baby completely into His hands by setting him into the river. As the baby floats along, the daughter of the one who issued the edict to have all the newborn Hebrew boys killed finds the baby. And she knows it's a Hebrew boy. There's no surprise here. And if you think for a second that maybe she had no clue that it was a boy, or maybe she didn't realize that there was actually this order issued to have them killed, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. She knew what was going on. The women around her knew what was going on. And she knew that this was a Hebrew boy. And what's she do? How does God reward the faith? She sends the daughter to get the boy's mother to continue raising him. Talk about ironic. God has a plan in all things. Exodus 2, 10 through 12 says, later when the boy was older, his mother brought him back to Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him as her own son. The princess named him Moses, for she explained, I lifted him out of the water. Many years later, when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews, and saw how hard they were forced to work. During his visit, he saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. I think it's amazing to see the action that the princess is taking, Pharaoh's daughter. Finding pity on this boy and then adopting him as her own. And if you look at the scripture, you realize that Moses knew, growing up, he knew that he was Hebrew because he saw one of his own people, which tells me that Moses being made known that he was Hebrew probably wasn't a secret. I mean, if we think back to the discovery of the baby in the basket, the helpers, the princess's helpers, handmaidens were there with her, and she exclaimed, "This must be a Hebrew boy." People knew Moses was one of these boys that was ordered to be killed. And yet God brings him into the fold of the Egyptians, and the Pharaoh's fear that the Egyptians or the Israelites would rise up against him was being made whole through his adopted grandson. But something happens, and we see Moses begin to realize and understand just what's going on and how wrong it is that his fellow people are being treated. So he decides to take things, takes matters into his own hands, and he kills the Egyptian man who's beating the Hebrew. But this wasn't the plan that God had. It wasn't for Moses to come and to strike these blows that would defeat the Egyptians in this way. God had a different plan in mind. But that makes me think, how often do we take matters into our own hands? When we see something that we think is wrong, we step up and we remove God from the seat of power and we make the decisions. We cast the judgment and we carry out the punishment. Because that's what we want. That's what we look for. We want that power. But that's not God's plan. God is in control. It's His plan for a reason. And we need to seek out that plan and follow it, not take matters into our own hands. Exodus 2, 13 through 25. The next day, when Moses went out to visit his people again, he saw two Hebrew men fighting. "Why are you beating up your friend?" Moses said to the one who had started the fight. The man replied, "Who appointed you to be our prince and judge? Are you going to kill me as you killed that Egyptian yesterday?" Then Moses was afraid, thinking, "Everyone knows what I did." And sure enough, Pharaoh heard what had happened, and he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian. When Moses arrived in Midian, he sat down beside a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters who came, as usual, to draw water and fill the water troughs for their father's flocks. But some of the other shepherds came and chased them away. So Moses jumped up and rescued the girls from the shepherds. Then he drew water for their flocks. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked, "Why are you back so soon today?" "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds," they answered. "And then he drew water for us and watered our flocks." Well, then where is he? Their father asked. Why did you leave him there? Invite him to come and eat with us. Moses accepted the invitation, and he settled there with him. In time, Reuel gave Moses his daughter Zipporah to be his wife. Later, she gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, for he explained, I have been a foreigner in a foreign land. Years passed, and the king of Egypt died, but the Israelites continued to groan under their burden of slavery. They cried out for help, and their cry rose up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He looked down on the people of Israel and knew it was time to act. How often have you been in or looked at a situation in your life and decided that God wasn't working or he wasn't working fast enough for you? Look at what's going on with the Hebrew people. They'd been in slavery and torment for years. Years and years waiting on God. Waiting for him to fulfill the promise, to restore them, to bring them to the land that he promised their fathers. I think we often treat God like we're the main character in our story, and God's supposed to paint this picture and lay things out that benefit us, that make us look good, that build us up, like we're the most important aspect of the story. See, that's wrong. It's not true. In fact, we are the supporting characters in God's story. See, the Bible, it wasn't about Adam and Eve. It wasn't about Noah or Abraham or Jacob, Isaac, Joseph, or even Moses. The Bible wasn't about Samson. It wasn't about Peter or Paul, or Timothy or John. The Bible, the story, is about God. And he uses people like us to continue moving his story forward. Continue glorifying him. It's not about you and me. It's not about what our lives look like. It's about how our lives reflect God. So if you're feeling like God's not paying attention to you or he's not working in your timing, what you've decided, maybe it's because you have taken the seat of authority in your life and you've kicked God out. Now, I get that that's harsh and maybe it feels really challenging to you. But if we look at really what happens, if we really assess our lives, we want the control. We want to make the decisions. We don't want God telling us what to do. The truth of it is, we want God to be a genie in a bottle. When times get tough, we rub it, we make our wish, and expect it to be granted. And that's why church looks so different. That's why church is so different now than it was from the early church. Because church has become about us, about our preferences. I mean, think of it. Maybe you know someone that has left the church. Maybe you're someone that's left a different church to come to this one. Why? Maybe you moved and your job brought you here. I get that. But what did you leave for? Did you not like something? What did your friend leave for? Or the person you know? Did they not like something? And what was that? Was it a preference? Maybe the music too loud? Maybe the music's too quiet? Maybe there were decisions made that you didn't agree with? But is church about you? Or is church about God? We've got to change. This series, Change Your Diet, is very real. Because we do. We have to change. We've got to stop letting church be about us. We've got to stop coming into a building or online, expecting to be fed and expecting to be entertained and expecting to go away feeling good about ourselves, like we've done the Christian religious thing. We've got to turn our attention to God. He is what matters. It's God's story, not ours. Let's continue on in Exodus chapter 3, looking at verses 1 through 10. One day Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." Then the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look. God called to him from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses!" "Here I am," Moses replied. "Don't come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord told him, "I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abuse them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people, Israel, out of Egypt." God's plan was always to use Moses to bring his people into the promised land. From the moment that Moses was born, the desire in his mother's heart to hide him and then to trust God to send him down the river to Pharaoh's daughter so she would find the boy and have compassion on him, to raise him, to adopt him, to bring him up as a prince in Egypt, to set a passion and a desire in Moses to stand up against the injustice that he saw. So that when God called, Moses would listen. God calls us. Not the God of our desires, not the God of our wants, but the great I Am calls us to go, to be alive. We, as a church, we must remember that we are a part of God's plan, a part of His story. That we are not going to place ourselves above God. Remember, Jesus told us, no student is greater than the teacher, and no servant is better than the master. God is number one. We are not above Him. We are to serve Him, to follow Him. And He has told us to go, just like He has told Moses to go. We will not have excuses anymore when we're called by God. No more excuses, because that implies that it's about us. When it's not, it's about God. It's His story. It's His heart. And if He says we need to go, then we will go. If he says move, we will ask where. If he says jump, how high? That kind of mentality. That's the God we serve. Not the God who obeys our commands. We will be faithful to answer his call, even if it makes us uncomfortable. Even if it's an area we feel weak, if God calls, we will answer. And we will change. We will adapt so that we can reach the people God is sending us to. Will you pray with me? Father, I'm asking for your strength and your courage as we move forward into this new normal. Set our hearts on fire with your Spirit, with your passion for your people. Here we are, Lord. Use us as you see fit for your story. Use this church as you see fit to glorify your name. We are here and we are ready to go. We praise you, Lord. Amen. Church, remember, we're told by Jesus to love God, love others, and to be the church. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to stay up to date with the latest information at lscc.tv. We'll see you next week.